Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hello. Craig Parkinson, and this is the Two Shot Podcast. Pop the kettle on and let's dive in. How the devil are you? Good morning to you. It's the Two Shot Podcast, and we are back with another episode. But before we get onto that, I just want to say a massive thank you to everybody. The response from the two-part Edinburgh Festival special has been overwhelming. It's been great. It was such fun to make and record and stomp around the streets of Edinburgh chatting to so many different people. I really hope it gave you a little glimpse into what it's like at the Fringe. And maybe, just maybe, myself and producer Griff will be going back next year for something very special, something that we're working on. More of that next year. More of this now. Amy Kelly is a brilliant actor, and you're really going to get to know her from this episode. We tried to make loads of things work, and it kept falling through for all sorts of boring reasons that I'm not going to tell you about. But finally, we got together. It was remotely in my living room, and Amy was in London, and we hadn't met before. We had friends in common who you will hear on the podcast that brought us together. And we spend quite a bit of time talking about pregnancy and giving birth and what she did after, which you'll hear, and we really get into. She went pretty much straight back to work on a very intense job with a tiny little bambino. We talk about the sort of how she navigated that and the support that she had, not only sort of from, you know, friends and family, but from the producers of her job and the channel, the network. It's really important to dive into that, which we did. And I think you're really going to enjoy it. So, without further ado, this is the Two Shot Podcast with the remarkable Amy Kelly. Enjoy, and I shall see you at the end. Is it because we're parents? Well, I'm a lot older than you, Amy. But you would think...
I've got to say, I'm very new to the game.
New to the game of what? Talking?
No, of parenting.
New to the parenting game. Yes. Well, I wanted to talk about that because I found out that... Am I right in saying it was a matter of weeks?
Yes.
That you gave birth and then you went to work?
Yes. Who told you that?
After 26 years, I know a few people.
Oh,
Amy,
he knows a few people.
It was, you know what? It was somebody who comes up on this podcast over the years quite a lot, and he's never been on, but he's one of my best friends, and it's...
Do I know him?
Neil Maskell.
Oh, my
it's
God. Stop. One of my favourite people in the entire world.
One of everybody's favourite people. Everybody needs Neil Maskell in their life, don't they?
Honestly, I was supposed to see him last week. Every time he's in town, we try and, you know, go for a meal or have some sort of catch up. He's one of those people that I'll just be friends with for the rest of my life. You know, you pick certain people and you carry them with you.
Well, we're certainly lucky when those people come into our lives and we just think, oh, where have you been? And will you stay?
Yes.
Please, will you stay?
Yeah. I've got a friend who who's worked with him. Is there anyone he hasn't worked with who works with him?
Actually, no,
and she always
not.
Says, I'm gathering bridesmaids, you know, like as she's working with different people. And I like that. But Neil, in fact, you know, Neil's given me some great parenting advice. I'll share that. He was like,
please do.
He was like, get out now. Do it now. Go for a meal now. He said, he was like, the second they start talking, papa, papa, and you can't have a conversation, just do it all now. And that was great advice because now I have a toddler and it's a whole different world. But yes, it was. It was a matter of weeks. It was three weeks postpartum.
Talk me through the logistical nightmare that that's going to be. I mean, and also not even that, emotionally, where were you at to go back to work and throw yourself into a long-running job?
It was a seven-month job, and I'm talking 14 to 16-hour days, you know. I'm Southeast London, so it was, and we were shooting like in Aylesbury almost in Hertfordshire every single day, same location for 7 months. So that's 2 hours there, 2 hours back, an hour 40 if you're lucky with the traffic. And pickup would be 4 a.m. We'd finish at what, 6:30? So it was long days, you know. It wasn't like, oh, you'd do that type of job and then you have like, you know, some days off and breaks and things like that. It was real intense. It was, do you know what? I've got nothing to compare it to. I don't know any different. Do you know what I mean? It was my first time. It's my first baby. So I've not had a maternity leave because I went straight from that job onto something else. And obviously they're so little at that point. He was like exclusively breastfed, which was a whole other thing I was learning at the time as well.
Well, I was going to say how I just can't begin to. I was talking to somebody about you the other day, not specifically you, but I said, oh, I'm conducting this interview and this actress did this, and they were like, what the fuck?
How did they
leave? Why not did they have a bit of downtime? What was the breastfeeding situation? And also, you're doing 12 to 14 hour days. You're having a long journey. Usually for anybody, right, in our business, that's already a long day.
It's a long day.
But when you get home, it doesn't stop because unless you have one of the miraculous babies, one of those miraculous babies that sleeps through from the start,
so
you're not off the clock.
You're not off the clock. I was never off the clock. There's a couple of factors that went into it. So I got the offer. The offer came through when I was pregnant. I was still pregnant. And I knew when I was booked in to have the baby and all that stuff. And Amy Hubbard was so amazing. I have to say this actually, because I feel like it does land sometimes with the gatekeepers, you know, and what their attitude is. And because I'd for full transparency, I'd gone in for a screen test for something else a couple of weeks, maybe a month before, like the offer came in for like a different person, a different project. I seem to be in the running for things. And I just knew when I went into the room and the director saw me heavily pregnant, which is obviously like, it's fine. Like I get it, but I could read his face and instantly I was out of the race. Do you know what I mean? So I went ahead with the test and all of that stuff, but I just knew. And so anyway, a couple of weeks later, we had this offer come in and she said, look, Amy's office has rang, like they really like you to do it. But also like, you know, she's a mother, so she's championing you. But also, if you take it and you change your mind, it's okay. And I was like, oh, wow, like, that's just, it, that was just so amazing, because not everybody gets that treatment first off. So off the bat, yeah. I already had that, you know, like that support from not just my team, my agents, but also from casting. And there's also this taboo-y grey area. I speak to so many actresses who found out, you know, I don't necessarily broadcast it, but I talk to so many actresses who reach out and they'd be like, oh, I guess I've put it off, or, you know, starting my family or any of that stuff because I'm scared that I won't get roles or something like that. And it's just that, it's that thing, isn't it? It's the lifelong thing of like, I think we just, we're actors, but we have a life to live also, you know, like mm-hmm. I can't put my life on hold, like for what, to get a job. Do you know what I mean? But this just so happened to fall in the space of, I was 3 weeks postpartum. Yes, I did think, what on earth is going to happen? How is this going to be like? But we, Apple TV, it was my first time working with them. I have to say them and 60/40 Films were really incredible. Like there was no question of, you know, we make sure we get the right car so that we have a baby seat in it, those type of logistics. There was like a comfortable trailer, so that was this space enough for like, a, you know, baby items. As the months go on, within 7 months, there was like the cot, and, you know, there's like the walker and the high chair, and he had all of his first things, like weaning and all that stuff. So, and we had a really amazing nanny. So, yeah, there is... I just want to say there's ways to do it. I think there's a taboo thing, yeah. like, oh, you have a baby and you're out of the game. But actually, I feel like I've never been busier since I had a baby, which is weird.
I mean, isn't that just the way? But it's incredible that, production was so supportive from the get-go, because it doesn't always happen.
I've listened to your podcast in the past and... I think it's so important for like other younger actors. Like when I was younger, I was switching agents, right? And at the time, it was all consuming. It was the event in my life, and it was really scary. And like, you know, it was just the thing. And then I listened to an episode of yours, of this, and someone spoke about it as just part of their journey, as just an everyday part of their journey. And I was like, oh, it happens all the time. Like, this is just a normal thing. So, you know, I'm on board with the... I'm trying to and be as honest about anything as possible, because I know how important it is.
And also, it's really nice to feel wherever you are, wherever you are in your career, whatever age you're at, to know, because it can be quite a solitary existence. And you do tend to think, especially if you get trapped in your own head, oh, well, I'm obviously the only person that's going through X, Y, Z at the moment. And then you hear somebody else talking about it and you go, oh, my God, I feel a little bit more supported than I was.
I can't mull past. That is how I felt. I just did. It was the first time in my life I was like, there's no one that I can copy here. There's no one that I can, you know, who's walked the road before me. Of course, there's other people that have been parents and all of that stuff. But like, I was the first in my friendship group, the first in, you know, I've got a good solid group of friends, non-actors, but I've also got a good solid group of friends who are actors. Mostly the actors are boys. So I didn't really have any, you know, no one that had really been in this situation. And I was like, you know, I know that I'm capable of this, but like, I just need to put things in place to make sure that all I've got to worry about is doing my job. So I've done stuff like I hired a sleep trainer. I had a really good sleep trainer. So I sleep trained him from those 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the evening, then in the trailer. So that, you know, in that time, that's when I would sleep in the car. So we'd both sleep together. Because that's so important, obviously. I guess I just took every day as it came, but just mostly made sure that I just put things in place around me. Basically, I was like, what have I got to do here to do this job, and just focus on this character and give it my all, because you're knackered on every job, you know, what any job that you do over a month, I think you're knackered anyway. So I was just like, what's another element type thing, like, you know, what else can you do?
Yeah, but were you not, before the birth and knowing that this job was on the horizon, were you not worried about how you would be post-birth emotionally, like inside? Because obviously things change once you have a baby and you sort of change.
100%. And I would be lying if I said, I don't think anyone goes through it and they have like a smooth run. I think it's the fifth day. I remember actually, this is funny. It's not funny, but so on the third day, I've got a couple friends who do actors actually who were ahead of me in terms of having babies. And they said, listen, be careful on the third day and on the fifth day, you're going to get a terrible hormone crash. It's going to be awful. Just get through it. And I was like, I'm sure not everyone gets that. Do you know what I mean? That type of thing. On the third day postpartum, I knew all this was happening, yada yada. I FaceTimed Jessie Barden.
I know, I know Jessie. Of Jessie Barden, yeah.
So she's got babies, a bit older than mine, but anyway, she was like, she was one of the gurus, you know, getting me through. I was like, because she, you know, and I just rang her and I just could not stop crying and it wouldn't stop. And I was like, and you know, she's in LA, I'm in London. And it was just like, I'll never forget this, right? Because there's certain moments in your life where you think, I actually don't know how I would have gotten through that, but I needed someone just to be so, she was so passive in her comments, but she was just so right. And she was just like, listen, this is what you need to do. You need to get out the house. You need to go for a walk. You know, just simple things, but someone getting you out of your head. And it was straight up baby blues. I didn't know it at the time, but that's what it was. It was just my body going through an intense loss of hormone crash. I had a C-section, and then she was like, hon, the reason that you've got such a bad crash is because the hormones left your body so quickly because you had a C-section. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is how it is. But you really appreciate those tiny little moments. Because I look back on it and I'm like, no one else could have given me that type of, you know, just talked me out of it in such a small amount of time. And look, everyone has a different time with it, and some last longer than others. And you can never say if you do get it once, you won't get it another time. But I'm just happy with the way things worked out. I definitely did experience the crash, and I was definitely on the cusp more emotionally. But I guess I was so busy. I definitely think that helped me move forward in a way. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. But I know that for me, sometimes, if I've got a tricky home life or something, there's a bump in the road somewhere, I know that I've got to go to work. I must admit, there's only been one time where I couldn't switch
off
my sort of brain off and switch into sort of actor's thoughts and put the character in the forefront of my mind and focus on that. And then as soon as I finished work, then I could come home and just break into 1,000 pieces, but then I'd have to put myself back together, you know? So as a new mum being thrust into such intensity of a 7 months job, did you find it hard to switch off as you normally would do, or did the brain sort of change?
Do you know what? I just think my brain, I never had a problem compartmentalizing, because that was my number one like game plan every single day. I just trained my brain from the day one. It was, you know, if I'm doing hair and makeup tests or if I'm doing prep or whatever it is, because obviously when it's 7 months, there's a lot of, you know, hair dyeing and hair cuts and continuity stuff. I'm either pumping, I'm breastfeeding. And if I'm not doing that, I'm switching straight into Jamie Mudd, I'm doing at armour training, gun handling. That's a whole new skill set that I'd never had to deal with, you know. And everyone's like, she's so tough. Like, was it hard, like, using the gun and stuff? And I'm thinking, it was a new skill and stuff. It was absolutely nothing compared to what was going on behind the scenes, like keeping a human alive. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if this answers your question, but in terms of helping me compartmentalize, I think it was great because playing a character so unfeminine and so, you know, quite masculine, and having just being on separate ends of the scale, you know, I go out of the trailer, I step on set, I take the gun, I'm Jamie. I go into the trailer, I feed the baby, you know, I take my bra off. it's two different worlds. So it was, yeah. And also another thing I've got to say, I had a brilliant on-set nanny for 7 months, and there's a lot to be said for that, because when someone is, interview, but I have to say that I was learning so much on that set in terms of, I didn't know how to breastfeed or look after a baby. I didn't know what a baby needed. And I would go in at 5 a.m. I would feed him in the hair and makeup chair. And then, you know, I remember Ange, she was our hair and makeup supervisor. She had like 3 kids herself, and she was like, do you, does he need to be winded? And I was like, what? And he's like, does he need to be winded? And I was like, oh my God, I didn't even know he needed to. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't know that a baby needed to be winded.
Of course not.
Right?
Why would you?
No, honestly. So then, you know, then I'm carrying on with my hair, and she's walking up and down the trailer because they all loved him, you know, and she's like burping him and winding him, and that was a thing. And, you know, I just learned so much from that it really, they say it takes a village with raising a baby. I didn't necessarily have a village. It's just me and my husband, but I did have a village. I had a film set and a film crew.
Yeah.
Like, I have to say things like, you know how much dirty laundry and stuff comes from having a baby. I didn't have time to go home and wash any clothes and things like that. I was getting home at 9:30 and going straight to bed, and then we were up again at like 3 a.m. So I would come in, and, you know, the costume woman lady had, you know, dried and washed the clothes, bless her, and just things like that. So my situation was definitely made easy by the lovely people around me as well.
And being in the community of people that do care and they do listen, because, you know, we're thrust into a situation where we have to forge, I mean, I'm not going to say friendships, but certainly working relationships and listening and being as kind as we can and being sensitive to so many different personalities, and being as gracious as possible on a set. That's going to make everybody even more gracious, bringing a little bambino.
I know. I don't think, I think I was quite popular actually on that set. And I was like, I'm probably not going to be as popular from now on, you know, when I go back just without, because he obviously doesn't need to come with me anymore. He's not a tiny baby, but, you know, it definitely gets you some brownie points.
Yeah. Well, what an experience. Please tell me you had a little break after that. Job finished.
Do you know
you
what?
Didn't go to another job,
this
did
is
you?
This is madness. But I actually said this to Neil. We were on set actually, and I told him about the next thing that I'd been offered to do, and he said, and I said, am I just going to absolutely kill myself here, or should I go up to Leeds and do this job for ITVX? It was like another one, and he said, make hay while the sun shines.
Yeah.
And he's right. Yeah. He's right, because
he's totally right.
The thing is, this is the same for all of us, but like, it really is. This is the way it goes in my life, is all at once or absolutely nothing at all. And I think that's all of us, because like I say, I've got a really tight knit, close group of like acting mates. And we're all the same. It's all or nothing. Always.
Yeah. Well, it has to be, I think, doesn't it?
It's the five self tapes at once. three of them are American. They're all 6 pages each. or just don't go for anything for like a month.
Now, you said the way you are now, you're in London. But obviously, for everybody listening, they'll know that you're not originally from London, are you?
Fraud, yeah.
You're not a fraud. I don't think anybody from the Northeast is a fraud. Tell me about where you grew up, Amy.
So, born and bred in the heart of Newcastle, Fenham. So if you open, I mean, I feel like we had more houses than hot dinners, but if you take like the house that my mum lives in now, it's so central that you open up the bedroom window and you can hear St. James's Park.
Really?
Yeah, it's mad. Yeah.
And how was it growing up there for you?
It was happy. It was, do you know what? I get this, I'm only realising this now as I go back. I don't get to go back an awful lot, right? Because, I've had work for the baby. And then before that, we were kind of in them couple of years of the pandemic and things like that. I lived in Newcastle from when I was born until I was 16. I ended up going to a boarding school in Hertfordshire, like a performing arts school, but I'll do that later. growing up in Newcastle, yes. So I'm from a single parent family. Every time I go back to Newcastle, I appreciate it more, is what I wanted to say. Don't know what it is. You never appreciate it when you're growing up. You never appreciate your surroundings when you're growing up, right? You want to get out.
Yeah.
Or not, maybe not necessarily growing up, get out for me, but...
It was for me.
It was for... Where are you from?
Blackpool.
Oh, Black... Yeah, okay. But do you know what? A lot of people... Anyone from, like... My husband's from Merseyside. And so if you drive along, like, Southport, you can see the... He tried to show me, like, he thought it was cool that you can see the Blackpool lights. And I was like... You've got to be joking. You've got to do better than that. Like, I'm from Newcastle. I'm from like this city. Do you know what I mean?
Amy Kelly, you just be careful. You're on very thin ice. No one can slag Blackpool off apart from
Listen,
me.
I'm not slagging off. I used to love the Pleasure Beach. We used to go there when I was younger. The clown when you first walk in. I don't know if it's still there.
Let's not talk about the clown. That's years
horror
of therapy
films.
Right there.
So, yeah, loved Newcastle. Loved Newcastle, but you know, I left when I was 16. So I do always feel that my time was cut short there.
Do you think that's changed as you've got a little bit older or since you've become a mum about your connection?
As I became older, I noticed going back for things like, I mean, Christmas would be the big thing that I would go back for, but... taking it for granted.
The thing is, sorry to interrupt. It's like when you're a teenager, you don't appreciate.
You don't.
You don't appreciate where you're from. You don't appreciate someone looking out for you, or very rarely those words of wisdom that your parents. The thing is, it's like. No, I think I know what I'm doing, actually. Of course you don't know what you're doing.
No.
I love going back now. I feel very nostalgic about certain things that have changed.
Yeah.
Where I used to knock about when I was younger.
Yes. And it's so, there's so, anywhere up north, right? It's just so, even from where my husband's from, they're so welcoming, right? Like, it's the only place, I never carry change anymore, but say I didn't have enough, if I didn't have my phone, I didn't have change, and I tried to get on the bus, right? I'm trying to get on the bus home, don't have anything, lost everything. iPad, just get on where you're going to, that type of thing. No problem.
Yeah.
I'm going to get home. It's fine. If I try and get on and he's still it, I've not got anything, I'm walking home. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's no one's problem. It's my problem. And it's just that coldness, you know? I went to see a thing at the BFI. It was called Working Class Heroes. Vicky McClure, Maxine Peake, and Johnny... Oh, my God. Johnny Harris.
I know because I was there.
Oh, were you there? A couple of years ago. And he said something, right? There might not be word for word, right? But he said along the lines of, you know, working class people, they're the only people that they'll put the kettle on for you. No one else will. Do you know what I mean? And of course, you'll see that around, but I definitely, it's just that feet. It's just that, the warmness, I think.
How does that make you feel about raising a child in London? And look, this is, I'm not having a dig at London, because London's a
fantastic
city. Oh
no, you can have as much. Over London. Go on.
No. But there'll be other people listening that will be protective over it, and that's absolutely fine, and I understand it. But I feel like I've done my time in, like it was a sentence, but I've done my training, I've done my time in London, and it's funny because I've bounced around quite a bit.
You've served your time.
I've served my time. But now, since moving back down south, and we're in just outside of Brighton now.
I
spoke about this quite heavily a few weeks ago with the comedian Colin Holt, who lives at the other side of Brighton, who is from Nottingham. And I feel that it has northern sensibilities, but in the south, by the seaside, like people do talk to you in shops.
Yes.
And that very rarely happens, certainly when I lived in Camden.
Oh, and North see, London, now Camden, like, I couldn't cough. I would come out in a rash, honestly.
Oh, God, of course you
because
would.
Because it's just, even when I go into town, I went into town today for a meeting, and I was like, I've became one of those like keyboard warrior people that are way more comfortable behind a screen. I was like, I've got to break out of this, you know, like I've got to get back into like being able to just meet people and be, but it's just the everything that comes with it. It's not taking the meeting. It's the getting on the tubes. Everyone's in a grump. Everyone's giving you a nudge. It's all like grumpy. And it's just, and then I'm a sponge, so I soak it up. Do you know what I mean? And I'm like, oh my God, he's really angry. I've done something wrong. And it's just, I don't know. I mean,
well, exactly. And doing what we do, or being the type of people that we are, it's like sometimes we take that energy on board, and it's like, I don't want to take that into a meeting because I was perfectly happy. I was perfectly happy before that thing happened on that bus, or that person did that. Or, you know, it's like, do you know what it is? Life's hard enough.
I don't need you making it harder. Keep your wooden spoon over there. I don't want any more added to the mix. But you know, risk of exposing myself, everyone, all my best friends know this. I was talking to my agent about it the other day. I said, my goal is to do one or two jobs a year where I can just be, where I'm happy with the work that I do, but I can get paid enough. All I want to do is just like, my vision would be to like buy a house in like the Cotswolds, move to in the middle of nowhere. I know that sounds so boring, and like literally make jam, speak to no one, turn my phone off, don't want to hear from you unless it's like scheduled. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like the fast pace. I've discovered that I'm quite an introvert, I guess. And I really enjoy the silence, and I really just enjoy walking the dog just talking to no one.
It's not at all. But sometimes it's the surroundings that can make you feel like that. Because if there's a lack of connection, or you kind of crave the connection and you're not getting it, then where do you go for it? You go somewhere else.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But it's funny because I obviously grew up in the city, and then I went to school in the countryside, and then went to school in LA in America.
Whoa. Okay. Just stop right there. So why are you going to school?
I don't want
to
keep you on here for like 3 hours. I feel like that's what's going to do it.
Talking for 2 days, it's a 2 day podcast. We'll break the record. It's fine if we need to do it and people will still listen.
Right. So in a nutshell, schooling wise, went to a couple of schools in Newcastle, it came to sixth form, where, you know, you kind of decide you're going to go to sixth form, what sixth form you're going to do. And it's weird, right? Because I never really hear this, but like, I do feel a lot of the stuff that I, you know, I've ended up in this position that I am today, and everyone's like, what was your journey and what was your path? And when I sit and think about it, really, like, I do feel like a lot of this, a lot of choices that I made when I was very young have landed me in the spot I'm in today, if you know what I mean. Like, I'm sure I would have came on some sort of similar route, but I realise actually a lot of things that I'd done when I was younger impacted where I've ended up today. So I guess when I was younger, and I was in school in Newcastle, I knew I didn't want to go to sixth form in Newcastle. I'd served my time at this high school. I'd done it. All girls Catholic school in Newcastle. It gave very good grades, but it was also centre Newcastle. So it's like fight central, all girls, you know, that type of thing. And I had good friends there and things like that, but I just felt like I was just had completely different interests to everyone.
Yeah.
And then I had a really good teacher there, a really good English teacher. And I was a massive reader as a kid. Like, I was just always had a book from as little as I can remember. And I'm still like that today, actually. And she just, you know, when you just have a teacher and it just, something clicks. Those people are so important as well, because they really shape who you are. I was just glazing through school. And when I say glazing, I was like, you know, I do the work and all of that stuff, but I was daydreaming through school, like just passing the time. Do you know what I mean? Like, none of this was going in one year and out the other. And I just couldn't find anything that I was engaged in. I would, Monday to Friday, I was like, right, my mom, she's a single parent, she was really good at, I've got a twin sister, and she was really good at, she'd break her back to give us the extracurricular things that we needed. I think she had a fear of, you know, she didn't want me hanging out on the street or all of that type of stuff. And so we tried all the different things, you know, the ballet and the horse riding and all of that stuff. And the thing that I stuck at was, it was like an old snooker hall. It was called the SA Academy. It was like in Biker, and someone had turned it into like a singing, dancing and acting thing for kids, you know, like three hours on a Saturday. And I found my whole school time, from what I can remember, was just starting on a Monday and just counting down the days until the Saturday.
Until you could get, yeah.
That's when I would feel, I can do, I'm part of this. Like, I'm interested in this type thing. So it was quite early on that I got the, I wouldn't necessarily say that I knew that I wanted to act or anything like that, but I had this, it took me a while to figure out, because there wasn't any resources there. Do you know what I mean? That's probably why I wanted to get out. I was constantly looking for what else is there for me type thing. When I was, like I said, this English teacher, she really like ignite. It sounds so like, you know, niche and cliche, but she really did ignite that something in us. I don't know what it was, but I was like, oh my god, like Lord of the Flies. We were reading Lord of the Flies, but the way she helped me annotate it, the whole class obviously, and the way she broke it down and made it understandable, I still use that method to this day. And I was just so engaged. I used to look forward to the lesson, you know, like the English lesson, because it was the only thing that I could get on with. And same on the Saturday school, you know, we'd just do. I had a drama teacher called Charles Hindley, and he was, you know, he was like a guy that used to go do a lot of Fringe and things like that. But he would hang out in Newcastle and teach a few kids on the weekend for like a bit of money or whatever. But what he just printing out scripts from like Friends and things like that gave me gave us something else to think about and do. And then I guess it was like a mixture of that and like I say, I was from a single parent family, but every Saturday we would sleep at my nana and granddad's, and every Saturday my nana and granddad, or my nana I should say, would let us stay up way past bedtime and watch the Channel 5 movie, don't remember. I don't know if you remember. There was always a Channel 5 movie. I don't know if that's still on, if that's still a thing. But the type of movies that we would watch, like I would so look forward to it. I'm talking like The Pianist, Reservoir Dogs, Once Upon a Time in America.
Brilliant! All the stuff that you actually shouldn't be watching at that age.
We all did. Boys Don't Cry. You know, really things that was way beyond mine and my sister's age. What was that? There's a, it was like a 90, what was it? There was a film with Frances McDormand, Paradise Road. That sticks out to me. I can remember that film, right? Scene for scene from just watching it on the couch when I was like 6, 7. It's mad. I just have a photographic memory of all that stuff. So by the time it came to, like, you know, being of age, I feel like I was just completely desensitized to all of that stuff. But what I did know is that I just loved the stories. So I just loved books and stories, and that's all I knew. That's all I had figured out. It didn't go further than that. And then it got to sixth form, and it's that thing of like, well, what are you going to do? You know, and I had my mum being like, well, you know, because you have to do something that you've got to do something that makes you money. You know, you've done well in German. So do you think you should carry on doing German? You know, that type of thing. And I'm like, I just really don't want to do German, mum. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're saying you get a lot of money if you become a translator. And I'm like, I don't want to be a translator. Like, no, you've got it wrong. And anyway, I think, you know, I auditioned for like National Youth Theatre, and I came to London when I was like 14. And I think that just changed everything. Because then I was put in a group for two weeks, lived in a crappy motel in Tufnell Park. In fact, the people that were in my group, class, whatever it was, have also gone on to do things in the industry. Friends of mine, Freya Maver, she's an actress, and Bessie Carter, she's also acting. Mm-hmm. They were in my, Tom Lambert is another friend of mine doing a bit of acting. So it's mad. We've actually all gone on. But National Youth Theatre is such a great catalyst for just young, in my case, certainly, just being like, oh, this is actually a job. You can actually do this if you want to take it further. And I'd not really seen that before. So I came back from that and I went back to school and I was like, oh, I feel a bit deflated. And I feel now a bit like, not like an alien, because everyone was so, like, I had good friends there, but just that, like, they were on a path that I didn't want to, follow, basically. I felt like there was no one who wanted to do the path that I was seeking or looking for.
But it's amazing, because at that moment, the door was open and you were let into this new room.
Oh, my God.
And then after a couple of weeks, they've gone, right, you've had your taste, now you've just got to go back to reality. What a crash down that was.
Honestly, so then when I go back to Newcastle, things had started to, I don't know if you say progress, but obviously the only thing really that we were aware of filming or anything of that type of nature was, like, you know, your Biker Grove and things like that. There was nothing really more than that. But then around that time, they started filming The Dumping Ground, which is like a CBBC show. And I was like, you know, I used to look, I watched everything, every single TV show, CBBC, Disney Channel, all that stuff. And I remember, this is so funny, I feel like I'm exposing myself, but like, you've got to laugh because it's like, it's so funny because I was a kid. And like, little me done this. I wrote to the production company of where they were filming The Dumping Ground, and I was like, you know, I've completed, you know, National Youth Theatre, got my certificate or whatever, and I was like, I was just wondering, where do you get like the actors from, you know, because I was trying to figure this out. There was nowhere that I needed to find it out. And
you were being proactive. You were being resourceful.
Can't believe I was being resourceful. Tell you what, more resourceful than I ever am now. I could do with a bit of that. But this is what I mean by some of the stuff that I'd done when I was younger. I've landed me here today. So they got back to me and they said, so we cast all our children from a local agency, you know, that type of thing. So straight away there was a buzzword. I was like, agency? So I need an agent. Like, you know, it was all falling into place. And it's so funny because my mum always says she kept this letter, right? That had the little Nick Sharrett illustrations of the Dunfin Ground. And they say, sorry, like, we're not interested type thing. It was like a first knockback, as you will. And then like a few years later, I had my own TV show on CBBC up against at the BAFTAs. And we swept them up at the BAFTAs that year, and I was like, this is so funny because I wrote to you guys like when I was like, you know, I don't know, like 14 or whatever.
Wow. So tell me about that journey. How did that happen? I mean, we've just been jumping around there.
So went realized I didn't want to go to sixth form. Found a few different places, realised I wanted to be closer to London because that's where National Youth Theatre was, and that's all I knew. Right, I didn't know about drama school or anything like that yet. And so I found there's a few good acting schools and around the country that are really renowned, but it means that the children can live there because they're boarding. So there was Tring, the old arts educational school, which is where I went. I think there's one called Harwood House. There's like a few others. Anyway, my mum said, you can choose one because we haven't got the petrol for, you know, all of them. So choose one and choose well type thing. And me and your granddad will drive you down to the audition. So I was like, right, I'll do that. So I'd done that. I auditioned. They actually ended up putting me on the musical theatre course because they test you and see what you can kind of do type thing. And so I was there for 2 years and I loved it. It was super militant in terms of, like, you know, you do your 4 hours in the morning of your academic studies, which is like your English, your whatever you choose for your options, your A-levels. And then in the afternoon, it's straight up vocational training. So these schools, they churn out, like, you know, the English National Ballet people and all of that stuff. But I was actually put on the musical theatre course, but then I went after a year. I was like, I went to the head of drama and I was like, I feel like my heart's here. Can I be on this course? Mm. And he was like, yeah, big up Mr. Ed. So while I was there, I'm trying to condense this as much as possible. While I was there, a friend of mine from National Youth Theatre, he said, Amy, there's an open audition for Skins and I'm going to go. And I was like, okay. And he was like, do you want to come? And I was like, well, I suppose I live near London now. Like, I'm allowed to do things on the weekend. I'm at school Monday to Friday, but I can come on Saturday. So, you know, like we met and it was like one of those places, kind of like the X Factor type thing, you know, like you got loads and loads of people there. And it was his thing. I was kind of the wingman, you know, it was his thing. But we went in and there was like 30 people. 30 teenagers, you know how it is. And they let everyone go, including Albie, but they kept me for some reason. And me and a couple of others, and then each round would get less and less and less. And then by the last few rounds, they were flying us to Bristol and the set, and they were kind of casting it and, you know, figuring out and all that stuff. And it was Jane Ripley, casting director. And I just remember getting to like the final two, and I look young for my age. I always have looked young for my age. So when I was 16, 17, however old I was when I was auditioning, I'd looked about 14, you know, I still had the braces, all of that stuff. And it was that, do you know what I mean? Anyway, it was a brilliant experience, and I just went back to school after that. And it wasn't like I'm going back to school, because I liked the school that I was at. I was doing stuff that I was interested in, and it was just like, oh well, I've kind of experienced that, because I so thought with my love of stories and writing and reading, I was convinced I was gonna be in the acting industry, but as a director. I didn't think I was going to act. Right. I didn't figure that out. Like, I hadn't. This kind of all came. with the, you know, just experimenting and stuff. And then she, obviously I didn't have an agent or anything. Jane Ripley rang my mom and was like, look, we've got this film. I'm casting the lead role. It's supposed to be a girl from London. Do you want to just bring her along anyway and we'll see what happens? And so I went along and I just remember being like, oh my God, it was all the girls from Skins that I had watched on TV. And they were all like cool, right, and like they were older than me and they were like sexy. Like it was just like, and I was like this tiny little, just not well developed, like, do you know what I mean? Like, I was like,
and also because you'd seen them on the TV.
I'd seen them, and they were the
when you watched them, they were the cool ones, they were the fit ones, they were the sexy ones. And now you're in that room together.
No, and we were in the waiting room together, and I just crumbled. I was like, there's no way I couldn't work it out. I was like, I hadn't. Obviously, that's a normal thing. Now you go into a cast or whatever and you see people, but as a kid I couldn't fathom that, do you know what I mean? Because I was like, those are the people, yeah, that I watch and that I are learning, that you learn from, right? Uh-huh. Anyway, we went in, Nurple, who directed it, he loved it, he had asked me to do something, I can't remember what it was, and he said, can you keep your accent? And I was like, yeah, I didn't know any different. He basically rewrote the script so that it was a girl from Newcastle. And so from that film, I got an agent from that because, right, I got nominated at the it was Best British Newcomer. Me and the director both got nominated at the London Film Festival. And so from that, I guess he kind of... that helped massively. And from that, this is a really long answer to your question, is how I got the second job, which was the Wolf Blood job on CBBC.
I mean, it just happens like that, doesn't it? Sometimes, because you can be sent something and you look on the page and you go, I don't think I'm right for that. But somebody has seen something. And so when our job is then to go in and give them an interpretation of how I would possibly do it and see if they see a little something. And the fact that he completely rewrote that script for that character to change the origin of that character.
Oh, it was,
says so much about what you came in with energy-wise and what the rapport was obviously between you and the director.
It was crazy, crazy. And, you know, I've got to say this because it was such a long time ago now and it was my first job and obviously I'm a completely different person. It feels like a different lifetime. I actually saw him at a premiere for a different film that I did quite recently. And I had to say to him, I said, this is so funny because... So my mum was still in that realm of, oh, she's taking time off school, she's going to get in trouble, she's on a scholarship, she's going to lose the scholarship, you'll have to come home, you know, that type of stuff. And I was like, oh my God, mum, I can't, like, I just can't deal with that. And so then he actually stepped in and was like, you know, like, you really have to start taking this seriously, but you could do this as a job. Like, you don't have to think about, like, backup. Because, you know, like, it's not my mum's fault. She's like... obviously playing two types of parents and she's trying to just think, she, you know, like she was trying to advise the best way she could. But he was the first one that said, you know, like people do this as a thing, like, because we were just so far from that world type thing. But I could not do that role now. So it's me and my friend were talking about this recently, not just about me in that film, but about actors, just being younger and different projects that we've done in the beginning, the same way. What he done is he took a really raw, like, kid, me, completely unfiltered, completely untrained, stuck a camera in my face, and it worked. It was gritty. I was not self-aware, all of that stuff. And yes, I can do I can give more mature, different performances now, and I can do things, of course, that I've evolved, wasn't able to do then. But equally, I couldn't do that and give that performance now. Do you know what I mean?
No, of course not. But you see that a lot, don't you? Certainly with lots of different directors who love to be involved with street casting because
yes.
they know
that
people that there's an innocence and a rawness that these young performers are given because they're unaware technically.
Yes.
And I don't mean that in a rude way. I think sometimes I wish, I'm sure you probably think the same, sometimes I wish I didn't know exactly what that camera's doing.
And I wish I didn't know that was the better side of my face. Because who cares?
I wish I didn't know. Yeah, we don't want to bring the vanity to the camera. I don't want to do that. And also, I don't want to know that that actor was being a little bit tricky in that scene.
Oh, God. I don't want to know.
It's very rare. Of course, it's because all you want to do is sort of play and listen and play the scene like it's never happened before.
Of course. And I think that you only really get that in theatre, you know, like the more aware and self-aware being aware of being self-aware is a thing. Like I talk about with my friends quite often, you know, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? The more work you do, the older we get, we gain all this experience, this life experience, which I always think helps me delve into different things, of course, but also you're gathering ego, you're gathering vanity, you're gathering, you know, no matter how many people say I gather all these horrible things.
Of course you do, and you wouldn't be human if you didn't, but also you've got to sort of balance. We spoke at the start, you know, about being accessible and dealing with stronger personalities or different personalities, because we have to, because we're in this work arena. But also, I've completely lost my train of thought.
Listen, because it's the time of night, I'm telling you. No, we're just talking about the being self-aware, and as you evolve and you grow older, it's a double-edged sword, basically. And it's the same as I personally think as starting in the industry quite young. You know, I think that is a double-edged sword, because your work is out there forever.
Yeah.
You do things that you certainly wouldn't be doing now, but it worked at the time.
Ah, that was it. I remember. So when you're dealing and having to juggle with people's personalities, but also as an actor coming on board to any project, even if it's something you've been doing for a few years, you still want to walk on with the energy and the enthusiasm that you did in those very early jobs.
Yes.
Where everything was shiny, everything was new. What does that do? What does that person do? Well, I know what all those people do now, but I didn't then, but I still want to come on.
You've still got to have the excitement.
And also be grateful. And I don't want to sort of, you know, talk about things through rose-tinted glasses, because we all have bad days, but sometimes I don't want to bring that onto set.
No, but I spoke about this recently. I can't remember who it was with. Perhaps it was in an interview, but it was about, I can't remember what the question was, but I just remember thinking, it's about checking in with yourself. I think they were asking about how you make decisions on stuff that you go on to and things like that. And I was saying how important it is. And this is what I live by now, but it wasn't, I had to learn this. This wasn't part of in the early stages of career, I'm like, you know, whatever I get type thing, you kind of do. I was building building a career or whatever. But now I'm like, well, each time I check in and think, you know, I'd be so excited to do that. But is it different to what I've done before? Is it different enough? Like, and I think in those moments, I don't know where we find the space for that now, but just having the awareness of I'm grateful for where I am, but I also, how am I trying to articulate this? keeping that fire, basically, how do you keep the fire? If I choose a job that I'm half asked about, I'm not going to be that excited. So how do I give myself the best chance and be the best person around with the people around us? Because I heard Emily Blunt say something. I watched an interview, it was like a clip that came up on social media, and she was like, they were like, how did you feel about not getting, because you were offered Black Widow but you couldn't do it? And I thought, oh, for God's sake, like, what a thing, did it, like, what a thing to ask, type thing. And you could tell she was clearly upset. Yeah. And she was like, look, I definitely wanted to do it, my heart was with Black Widow, I was contracted, this is how it works, but I certainly didn't go on a set with a smacked arse, face like a smacked arse, if that's what you're asking. And that is what I'm trying to articulate. Like, you,
well, you are, well, you did articulate it very well. Okay. I think you're dead right, and I think it's really important, as you said before, to check in with yourself and to have a word, because it's very important just to say yes I'll do that, oh yes I'll do that, but I don't think it's going to make me very happy, but I'll still carry on doing it.
Equally, people do it for the money if they're trying to buy a house or whatever. And
Of course, you know, sometimes I think we're in a very privileged position.
Yes,
to
very.
Do that, but, you know,
and sometimes you can feel when advising friends too, either I'm on the receiving end or I'm on the advice giving side. This is a conversation that comes up a lot with the type, we're all trying to buy houses and things like that. It's like, you know, do I need to do this, or am I just trying to skip the queue here? Because I could do that. Like, in a couple, it's not going to make a difference. Do you know what I mean? And it's having people that you can check in with, I think.
Exactly. And putting finances aside for a minute, a script might just fall into the inbox and it has no budget whatsoever. But it means so much to you that you have to do it.
Earlier this week, it was a theatre show, and I instantly just, there's nothing, and I instantly, I was like, I'm doing this. I don't want anyone to don't want anyone to argue. You know, I got in there on the WhatsApp because I've got like two agents who are kind of like, there's like a triangle, you know, it's not just like a back and forth between two people. So there's like three of us, and I was like, I'm getting in here first. I know you're probably not thinking the pay is, you know, blowing you away, but they would completely agree. They were like, no, we think it's great as well. So, that's when you know you're invested, you know?
Absolutely. Amy, this has been wonderful. And if you've enjoyed it, and I really hope you have, I think we've got a lot more to talk about. So I think you should probably come on and we should do this again.
Oh my God, what? Am I that person that's carrying on?
I've done it with a lot of people.
I was just going to say, you're going to have to stop me waffling.
Don't you worry.
And I've waffled.
Don't worry. You have not waffled at all. Everybody thinks that they have and it hasn't, but it's very rare that we have these conversations where one person turns the spotlight onto the other and goes, tell me. And then my job is...
It's because I never do that.
Nobody does when you think about it. Nobody does. But it's just my job to sort of gently guide. And that's exactly what we've been doing because it's part of the conversation. But what I would love to do next time is we do it in person.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And another episode is done. I really hope you enjoyed that. I loved spending time with Amy. She's such a laugh and quite remarkable. I know that we've always got problems when we become parents, you know, with regards to being an actor and childcare and things like that. But there's not a lot of other jobs where you can bring your baby to work and carry on with what you need to do and what you love to do. So massive thank you to Amy, and as you heard, no doubt she will definitely be coming back on for another chat. I don't think we only scratched the surface, didn't we? As we always do here on the Two Shot Podcast. Well, I think that's probably it for this week, don't you? If you are at a loose end and you want to support British independent cinema, get yourself to the pictures. My recommendation this week is the debut feature from Charlotte Regan called Scrapper. We all went to see it last Saturday at the beautiful Duke of York Cinema here in Brighton. It's 84 minutes long and it's It's a cracker. Scrapper is an absolute cracker of a film. We really enjoyed it. So go and support British independent cinema. Scrapper is out now. We're not sponsored by Scrapper. It's just my recommendation. So until next week, I've been Craig Parkinson. He's been producer Griff. And this has been the Two Shot Podcast. You take care. I'll see you next week. The Two Shot Podcast was presented by me, Craig Parkinson. Recorded and produced by Thomas Griffin for Splicing Block. The remix of our theme tune is by Stolen Valor. Cheers. Bye.